Hi, and welcome to Conversations for a Thoughtful Judaism. My name is David Zvi Kalman, and I'm a scholar in residence at the Shalom Hartman Institute of North America. If you've ever spent any time even glancing at the Bible, you'll know that Judaism cares quite a lot about the ways that people behave, and this system of instruction really amounts to a kind of code for how to act in the world. What isn't as clear, though, is whether that set of instructions amounts to a code of ethics, and if it does, whether there's something particularly Jewish about that code, or if instead you could have arrived at the same behavior through other means. The conversation you're about to hear is about exactly this question. What makes Jewish ethics Jewish, and is there such a thing as Jewish ethics at all? This conversation is part of a set of three conversations on ethics in this podcast series that deal with questions like how Jewish sources think about negotiating competing obligations and whether Torah study can make people more ethical. All of these conversations are closely tied to Foundations for a Thoughtful Judaism, which is an introduction to Jewish thought that's meant for teachers and students of every background. Now, you don't need to know anything about foundations in order to appreciate this podcast, but if you're interested in learning more after the episode is over, everything about it is on our website at shalomhartman.org/foundations. For this conversation about the Jewishness of Jewish ethics, I spoke with Daniel Hartman and Leora Botnitsky. Daniel Hartman is the president of the Shalom Hartman Institute, and Leora is the Ronald O. Perlman Professor of Jewish Studies at Princeton University and the Senior Fellow at Hartman's Kogod Research Center. Here's the conversation.
I'd really love if we could start by just having each of you pick out a specific moment when you felt that you were acting not just ethically, but according to a Jewish ethic. Leora, why don't I
start with you? Well, thanks, and thanks for having me. I think I'm going to maybe mention a series of moments that I feel actually comes up pretty often in my life, and that has to do with living in a context, both a secular context, but also to a large extent a Jewish context in which achievement is so much valued, and one of the results is a culture that can be very boasting. And so for me, often it comes up in my own work life, but also, say, my children in their schools, where I see so much of this overemphasis on achievement and also overemphasis on boasting that I've found many times I've had to respond with talking about what I think humility means in a specifically Jewish context. So, I mean, the very specific times I would give, for instance, is when two of my three children, one is in college, the other one finished college, my third is still in high school, but when they get ready to do their college applications, the advisor for these applications asks the parents to write something that's actually called a brag sheet about their children. And so I have to admit, my husband and I do write this out, but both times we've done it, and I imagine it'll be like this the third time, it's really a difficult experience because on the one hand, we're very proud of our children. But on the other hand, we think this is a really terrible way to be thinking about things. And so just in trying to balance, on the one hand, the fact that we do live in a particular context. And so unfortunately, writing something like a brag sheet, just one does want to have a good application, but also feeling like this is something that is really against our values and trying to discuss that with our children. It's come up in lots of other ways as well, but those would be, you know, sort of the specific instances around the same kind of issue.
Man, the brag sheet is terrifying. My kids are in elementary school and younger. I'm not looking forward to that moment. Daniel, how about you?
So first of all, Leora, that was such a powerful and beautiful example. You know, our tradition says, Eizu ha-chacham ha-lomed mikol adam. You know, who is truly wise? The person who knows that they can learn from other people. How do you put that on a brag sheet? I think about my kids here in Israel. They're now older, but now it's coming on my grandchildren. When we're at that age, we don't have a brag sheet, we have a worry sheet because they're going into the army. So maybe it's crazy, but there's something healthier about it. So thank you for that. For me, this last year, there was a very powerful moment in the midst of Corona where I felt very pulled by the ethics that I learned from my tradition. I don't believe that there is such a thing as Jewish ethics. I think good Jewish ethics are universal ethics. We'll come to that. But there are particular language to do something universal. There's a particular way in which you talk about it. But the first stage of Corona was fear. That was what I experienced at the first moment. Fear. What's going to happen to me? What's going to happen to my family? What's going to happen to my mother who's 87 years old and really sick? If we need, are there going to be enough ventilators? That was the first moment. But very quickly, as we donned the masks in order to protect ourselves, I began to see some people who weren't wearing them. And I began to realize that the deep moral obligation is not merely the moral value of self-preservation, which is a moral responsibility. Self-preservation is not amoral, it's moral. But all the teachings that I learned about the laws of damages in our tradition, that when you walk in the public sphere, you don't dig a hole because someone else might fall into it. You have to make sure that your property doesn't damage someone else's property. That when you build a house, make sure you build banisters or protection so that people don't fall off the porches. That our core responsibility as people is not merely to protect ourselves and to worry about our rights, but that when you enter into the public sphere, you have to make sure that you aren't harming other people. And pages and pages of Talmud, years of Talmud, actually, of studying of all these laws that I never felt that they were that relevant. Because, you know, I don't think about myself as someone who could damage people. Like, I'm a nice person. My mother loves me, my kids, my wife. You know, it's like, I'm sweet. That's what they told me. So I don't think I have to worry. No one's who you're going to damage somebody. But that a human being has to understand that you have the capacity to harm other people. And our tradition says that a moral responsibility is that when you walk into the public sphere or even in the private sphere, whenever somebody else comes into your proximity, you have to make sure that you're not harming other people. Those laws spoke to me very, very deeply this year. And I walk around with two masks, one that I wear and my backup in my pocket. I give it to people who don't have it, or if mine would tear, because I don't want to be at that moment that I could be digging a pit, a biological pit that somebody else might be falling into. And I was very conscious of our tradition's teaching about these laws of damages and responsibility in the public sphere this last year. It shaped me throughout the year, and it also shaped the way I looked at people who didn't feel that way, who are just walking around, and it wasn't saying, oh, I'm not afraid of corona. What were they saying about their sense of sharing a public sphere with others and their recognition of their responsibility to them? That was a very big, that touched me very deeply this year.
I really appreciate what you just said, Danielle. I think that's absolutely true. And I also completely agree with you that there's no such thing, say, as specifically Jewish ethics. Nevertheless, I think in the context of what you just said, it is maybe important to say that there are different emphases in different kinds of ethical worldviews. I don't even like the word systems in this sense. I think that something does often mark the Jewish tradition, which is, of course, a very diverse tradition, but is exactly what you just said, which is a view of ethics that has to do with, first and foremost, not doing any harm. And I think that's different from the ways in which a lot of people, at least in the United States, tend to think ethics, which is all about things you have to do to make the world good. And of course, that's important too. But I think there's actually something very deep and profound about this notion of knowing how much harm we can actually do. And the fact that we have to continuously think about what we're doing, not just for the good, but for how we're harming people. I mean, if people just thought about that more frequently, we would actually be in a much, much better place. And so I do think this is an emphasis in the Jewish tradition.
Now, the language of emphasis is really interesting. I do believe that there are certain core universal principles through which our behavior is judged. But each tradition focuses on different parts of it. And that tells a lot. It's not that it's antithetical or it's not to the others. And it's not that you have to be Jewish in order to do this. But what you choose to focus on makes a very, very big difference. And I know the famous story of the person who at the end of the prayer service, you take three steps back as you pray for God to bring about universal peace. And as you're praying for universal peace, you don't look back and you step on somebody. So don't repair the world. You know, I love this notion. Tikkun Olam scares me. Repairing a whole world. In your space and in your neighborhood, when you walk in the public sphere, are you aware of your personal responsibilities? And I think a very big part of the emphasis that our tradition gives is not thinking paradoxically about repairing the world, but thinking about the street that you're about to walk in, thinking about your cow or now your car. Those micro ethical moments, which don't change the universe, but change your neighborhood or your little block. There's something about the halachic system which works on such a micro level, sometimes it's exhausting. In these pages of Talmud, you forget even the ethical concern because the minutia could exhaust you. But there's something about minutia ethics, which is a particular emphasis of our tradition, and I think a really important one.
So I want to pick up on something that I think I'm hearing from both of you, and that this is so fascinating. So first of all, it's helpful to hear from both of you kind of out of the gate that you don't, strictly speaking, think about Jewish ethics as something which exists in and of itself, but is kind of a language to think about ethics, but that, as with all languages, there is a different kind of emphasis or a different perspective that it gives you than you would have if you were approaching ethics from some other system. But there is, of course, another way to think about Jewish ethics, which is ethics that is specifically about the Jewish people or prioritizes Jewish people in various ways, the land of Israel, people who are kind of in closer relationship to you. And so I'm curious how that notion of Jewish ethics connects to the kind of Jewish ethics that you were speaking about previously, which is very much a kind of universal, easily recognizable ethic, which you wouldn't have to be Jewish at all to understand. How do those two things
In some ways, I'll go back to humility. Most religious traditions or traditions do have some notion of humility. I don't want to say that the Jewish view is unique, partially also because I don't know every other tradition. But nevertheless, I do think there is, I would say once again, maybe a particular type of inflection, which is this notion that humility is somewhere in between arrogance and abasement. And so you don't want to go to obviously one extreme or the other. So humility is not abasement in this context, I should say. Danielle said just a minute ago about self-preservation is not amoral, it's moral. And so I think that the relationship between Jewish particularity and universalism, I think, is quite similar. It's this in-between position. I think it can go too far in either direction. And I think that it's not an easy thing to maintain. There are obviously very problematic aspects of certain views that go too far in the direction of particularity. But I think to a large extent, there can be problems with views that go too far in the direction of universality. I'll just give a more concrete example in this regard. If we just bracket the Jewish people for a moment, we just think about the family. It seems to me that it's perfectly right that one should value, not even value, but worry about one's family before you're going to worry about people you don't know. That doesn't mean that you don't care about people you don't know. It doesn't mean that you have a right to procure things for your family at the expense of others. Certainly not. I mean, that's entirely wrong. But it seems to me a very human thing that we should have these particular, I think in a Christian context, we would call them particular loves. And I think that's right. I think it's very Jewish and I think it's very human, but it is always, always, always a balancing act. And I think in a lot of ways, one can see a lot of the problems in the contemporary Jewish world today as really a reflection of the difficulty of getting to that middle position, which is so hard to maintain, specifically also because circumstances are always changing. And so that middle position always has to be recalibrated. You can't just stay there.
I agree, Liora. I just would never call this Jewish ethics, David Zvi. I would just use a different term. And I think what Liora was pushing you towards is loyalty to a particular group is not immoral or amoral. Every social group, whether it's a family, whether it's a community, whether it's a city, whether it's a state in the United States or a nation, whatever they might be, demands loyalty. And your moral responsibilities are judged by the priorities that you create. And our core moral instincts, generally, there's some moral philosophers who argue otherwise, but they've been in the minority for hundreds of years, that proximity, whether through family, through their national identity, does create greater responsibility. And that's not Jewish ethics. That's your moral responsibility to your group, to a group, whatever it might be. So you speak in America about universal health coverage. What do you mean? Who's universal health coverage? Does that mean that everybody in the universe has a right to health coverage at Hopkins or at Mount Sinai Hospital? No, it's universal in America. No society distributes all of its goods equally to everybody in the world. Just no group works that way. But somehow, just as Liora, you said, somehow that position is perceived to be immoral, a lack of largesse. Somehow moral enlightenment requires me to transcend my basic loyalties. And I think that's just simply wrong. I don't think that's the way we work. But unfortunately, it gets problematic when certain groups are not allowed to have loyalty. Somehow that's a moral failure. And that's why that's not Jewish ethics. Jewish ethics is not the ethics of loving the Jewish people more. Ethics, if we take Kant, one of his principles, act in such a way that you'd be willing for your behavior to be universalizable. Giving priority to my children is an act that I would be willing to be universalizable, that the resources that I have, I distribute first to my children. I have limited time. My mother claims me. And if I would say, excuse me, I'm repairing the world right now and my mother be alone, would that be perceived as a more noble moment? So that's not Jewish. That's ethics. That's universal ethics. But unfortunately, the particular, your moral responsibility to the particular has somehow been denigrated. And Lior, as you were talking, I think a big part of Michael Sandel's work, through telling stories, Michael Sandel, one of the more significant political philosophers of our generation, who's done a lot of work on ethics. But one of the things that he's innovated the most is a methodology about how you think about ethics. Because when you sit in the classroom and you say, okay, where do you have a greater moral responsibility? It's very easy to theoretically articulate some distinction of a claim of a world. If your children are doing well and your kids are so successful, they're in college, well, you have no moral responsibility to your kids. Ignore your kids. Don't pay their tuition. They'll be fine. Give that money to Africa. Maybe in theory, you're sitting in a classroom. You might ask, where do you have greater responsibility? But what Michael Sandel has trained us, and in many ways, this is Socratic ethics as well, is tell a story. We have to activate our intuitions. Let me tell you a story. How would you act? And by telling that story, you're trying to get people to understand a certain commonsensical moral intuition instead of an over-theoretized sense of the good, of this perfect good. And here, ask, you're a parent, you're a child. Who claims you? Do your parents claim you? And the minute you recognize your parents claim you, okay, you're an American. Are you giving Social Security equally to the world, or does American citizens claim you? And even now with the vaccines, it is a serious issue. How do we balance? But the notion of priority is a core moral principle. And again, as Liara said, and I think we have to expand on it, the issue of exclusively caring about your group, whether it is your family, your neighborhood, your nation, that's the difference between nationalism and fascism. Nationalism says every group demands priority. Fascism says the priority to your group exhausts your moral responsibility and nobody has a counterclaim. Lior, that dance, you want to expand on that a little bit more?
Yes, I mean, I agree with everything you said. I'll just add and come back to this is when I was talking about it, I do think it is Jewish, the view we're trying to describe, but I also think it's human. This is how human beings are. I think that's one of the advantages of the Jewish view, which is a human view. I mean, is an answer to the question of who are we as human beings? And a lot of times in these discussions of ethics, certainly in abstract discussions of ethics, people don't ask that very basic question. Who are we as human beings? And what you're left with, and this is true for many college courses on ethics, you know, you've got the utilitarians and the consequentialists and the ontological and this and that, and the students leave the class and they're like, okay, well, there are no ethical answers because everybody disagrees. I just have these schools, but it's not rooted in stories about our lives. I mean, I think that, yeah, the view that it's only about loyalty to one particular group within a nation, some people would call that nationalist. I don't agree with it. I agree with your distinction between nationalism and fascism. Some people would want to distinguish, say, between patriotism and nationalism. That patriotism is this more inclusive view and nationalism, the more narrow view. But these are really academic conversations. But I agree. I mean, I think it does actually really relate back to what you were saying at the beginning about worrying about the harm that we're going to do. Another way of putting that is that we live, I'll speak about the United States here, is that we live in the United States, and it's really not clear that we do have any conception of the common good. And the common good is the view that you need to be thinking about the harms that you could cause to the common good. If we had a conception of the common good, people would wear masks. It's not complicated in any kind of way. And that's, I think, very disturbing in many, many ways. And honestly, it's hard to know exactly how we come back from that.
An example of that, I live in Israel, and one of the basic common goods that we are raised towards here and a sense of responsibility is that it's your responsibility to stand up and to protect this country if it is being threatened. And the name, the IDF, is not by accident. It's the Israel Defense Forces, and it is illegal under the code of ethic of the Israeli army to use the army for a war of aggression. Whether politicians do that or not, that's a separate issue. I remember I don't use one eye, and they wanted to make me a non-combat soldier, so I cheated. And at the age of 18, you actually thought that was a smart thing to do. And I cheated on my eye exam to become a combat soldier because it was my responsibility to do everything in my power for that common good. I was going to protect my country. And I felt that in doing so, I was fulfilling one of my most deep moral responsibilities. Love your neighbor as yourself is only possible if you love yourself. Love of self, self-defense. This is, you don't love humanity and hate yourself, just like you don't love humanity and hate your neighbor. If human life has value, then my human life also has value. And therefore, protecting that was critical. But at the same time, in this balance between the individual and your particular loyalties and others. So I go to war, and I'm a tank commander, and I have to fight to defend my country. But I also have to make sure that I don't hit innocents. Morality of war is the perfect example of the balance between particular and universal ethics, between your moral responsibility to your group and your responsibility to others. And when the Israeli code of ethics says that you are only allowed to use your weapons in self-defense, and you're only allowed to use it in proportion to the danger you face, and you have to do everything in your power, including endangering yourself, to avoid civilian casualties or casualties to prisoners of war, is saying to you, yes, what you call nationalism or patriotism, protect yourself. But that doesn't mean that in that moment, everybody else disappears. And David Zvi, this is where your notion of Jewish ethics can become Jewish non-ethics. It's where ethics becomes chauvinist, fascist, racist, could be, whatever categories you want to use, where the only ones I care about are Jews. That's not the issue. Every human being claims me at different moments in different ways. And the moral journey is to engage in that ongoing struggle to know which one comes first, until which place. You know, okay, I have a loyalty to my kids. Great. So I have to pay for their college. I have to give them clothing. I have to feed them. But I also want to buy them toys. But is it the fifth toy or my neighbor who needs food? Like, at what point? I'm not stopping at food and shelter. I'm going to buy my kids toys. You know, I don't feel guilty at Hanukkah. And I'm willing to spoil my kids. But at what moment do you say, 1 second, is there someone else who claims me, or does my family? Because your family could always exhaust. That's both on a family level and on the Jewish people. Loyalty to the Jewish people. But human being qua human being claims you too.
So I want to stay on the subject, but move it in a little bit of a different direction. Another way that we can speak about Jewish ethics is as a piece of one's Jewish identity. I find that the ways that both of you are speaking about Jewish ethics right now is helpful in thinking about how care for a particular group of people doesn't necessarily mean that you're divorcing yourself from universal ethic, but actually that can be a part and parcel of universal ethic. But I think the question is a little bit different when it comes to how that ethic is a part of one's Jewish identity in connection to all the other things that are part of one's Jewish identity. Connection to notions of peoplehood, connection to notions of place, to God, all the various characteristics. Because it's one thing to say, you know, my ethic is universal, but it's another thing to say, like, my ethic distinguishes me in some way from other kinds of people, and to have that be a kind of important component of one's Jewish identity. I think the other piece of this that's important to mention is that within the Jewish tradition, it's not like we just have laws, but there's a story behind the laws. There's a story behind how we got these laws. And there is, at least in some Jewish philosophical tradition, a notion that Jewish ethics is an important historical step for the world and a kind of process of developing ethics, right? Like the notion of ethical monotheism as something which Judaism introduces to the world. So I'm curious, given that you are both very open to the notion of Jewish ethics as being universal, how much it ends up being a core of your own Jewish identity, and how much that narrative around the place of Jewish ethics within the world's ethics is important.
I'll say, I think that's a question that really has to be answered in terms of context. So, I mean, the short answer without context would be that's actually not that important to me. But I'll say why that's not that important to me. It's not that important to me because I live in a context in which I don't have to defend the viability of Judaism, the rationality of Judaism. I mean, it doesn't mean everybody likes Judaism or Jews. But as opposed to when you mentioned ethical monotheism, someone like Herman Cohen, writing in the late 19th, early 20th century, who really wants to make an argument in the German Jewish context, and this was quite common, that not only does Judaism have ethics, books, but it's The Moral Religion, or Abraham Geiger says that Judaism is the moral genius of mankind. And so this is a strong argument. Now, I think that what's important to see is that they're writing in contexts and to people, not necessarily just to Jews, but to Christians, to Protestants specifically, who think that at best, Judaism is a relic of the past. At worst, many other bad things. I mean, very negative things. So they're really making those claims in order to say, look, if you are so committed to your own identity as liberal Protestants, then actually a lot of what you're saying is good about liberal Protestantism, you got from Judaism. Now, that sounds like a really obnoxious claim taken out of context. I mean, I'll mention Geiger again. His dissertation was called What Muhammad Borrowed from Judaism. And the answer is a lot. Okay. Now, he's right. I mean, in terms of historical scholarship to see this development, but there is that emphasis precisely because there's this need to actually defend that Judaism could actually be not just a living religion, but a living civilization, let's call it that. So I feel that I'm quite lucky to live in an American context where even though there is anti-Semitism and we shouldn't not recognize that, nevertheless, it's an entirely different context where I don't have to make those kinds of claims in order to just be Jewish. I'll give you another example. Think about Yehuda Halevi, one of the more particularist figures in the Jewish tradition. I mean, the subtitle of the Kuzari is a defense of a despised faith. His claim is not just the superiority of Judaism, but the superiority of Jews. And some of them are troubling, that's for sure. But I think it's also very important to see that he is writing in a context in which Judaism and Jews are completely despised. And that's been the case for much of Jewish history. So I tend to look at those cases in those contexts. And I think it's just very important in our own context. I think this is true in Israel as well, even though I don't live in Israel, to recognize that we're actually in a very different position. And those claims are both not necessary and inappropriate, in my opinion.
As Liora said, a major attack, in many ways, an essential anti-Semitic move, was to say, Judaism, you're a religion of ritual and laws. You're the failed people whom the prophets look to. And God says, why are you giving me sacrifices? This is disgusting. You're the people of the law. And especially as we move into the modern era, you know, like we have ethics. And all you have is a bunch of rituals whose goal it is just to preserve your people. You're not an enlightened religion. And then so the ethical monotheism is to turn it over and to say, no, we're the most enlightened. And as Liora says, we could be free from that. But at the end of the day, the tradition that I'm a part of, and that's been a deep part of my life, is the tradition that has been guided by Hillel, who, when a person comes to him and says, convert me on condition that you can teach me all of Torah while I stand on one foot. And Hillel says, do you know what Torah is on one foot? What's hateful unto you, do not do unto others. That's the whole Torah. The rest is commentary. Go and study. He doesn't say faith in God. He doesn't say keep Shabbos and kosher. He says, the essence of Judaism is the ethical. But here I think it's important to make a critical distinction. I think you do a disservice to Judaism and to human beings when you reduce that which is meaningful to the ethical. I want a religion in which the ethical is primary, but it is not exhaustive. That everything is judged by whether it fits to your ethical principles, that no ritual, no act of faith could have value if it undermines your ethical obligation. So I write in my book about putting God second, how to save religion from itself. Could faith in God cause you to ignore your moral responsibilities to others? What Hillel says, what's hateful unto you, do not do unto others. That's the whole Torah. He's not saying that there's nothing else, but everything has to be judged. If you are not a mensch, if your moral responsibilities to others are being neglected, everything else is insignificant. But you could fulfill all of your moral responsibilities and still be a mediocre person. Because what about a life of faith? What about a life of culture? What about a life of community? So ethics is the test. Ethics is necessary but not sufficient for Jewish identity. And doing the good is a core part of how I feel I'm living my Jewish life. And I don't need these ethics to be uniquely Jewish to feel Jewish about it. When I do it, it's part of my particular identity. But the other parts of my particular identity, which include, by the way, most of my rituals, are just a language through which I fulfill many of my ethical responsibilities. The whole Jewish calendar is basically a calendar of Jewish ethics and values being expressed in a particular language of my people with my particular story. So if I want to learn about that all human beings are created in the image of God, poof, I come up to Pesach, and Passover tells me that you were slaves in the land of Egypt, and therefore you shall love the stranger. Each one of my values is given a holiday, and those are my particular ways of celebrating them. So ethics is necessary, but it's not sufficient. It is a core foundation. I can't be Jewish without the ethical. And Judaism without the ethical has no value, as God in Isaiah says. But as a part of a comprehensive Jewish identity, then it becomes more interesting.
So let me ask you one final question. You're both Jewish educators. You're both scholars. You both have more than enough language to describe ethics of all sorts using sources from the Jewish tradition. How important is it for you, just in your role as parents, as educators within a family, how important is it for you that your children or your grandchildren not just are ethical, but are aware of their ethics using a Jewish frame? How important is it that they understand the things that they're doing as being part of a Jewish ethical tradition? Or would it be fine with you if, like, they did all the right things, but didn't have that link?
I live by the song Dayenu. It's enough. If my children fulfilled their moral obligations and were good people, Dayenu, it's enough. My most important thing for me is that my children be good people and fine people. Dayenu. Now, I also want my children to love their Judaism. And I want them to have strong Jewish identities. And I want them, as Liora said it in her first remarks, that there's a particular emphasis or language. I want them to speak Jewish. And part of the way you speak Jewish is Jewish ethics. But even more than that, part of the way you love Judaism, see, building a Jewish identity is a really hard thing. There's this beautiful Maimonides says, why are there 613 commandments? You know, like, God, you needed 613. How many did you need? It's like, enough. You create this perennial guilt. And Maimonides says, no. The reason why you have 613 is so that everybody could find one mitzvah that's theirs and do that perfectly. And with that, create a full life. So I want my children to love their Jewish tradition. And I want them to be able to find those rooms and those parts of Judaism that speaks to them. Now, what's going to speak to them might be some of the things that speak to me, and it might not be. It might be some very, very different things. So a Judaism that has faith and spirituality and ritual and behavior and community and ethics is a Judaism with multiple doors, with multiple rooms within which you can build an inspired Jewish life. So is it critical for me that my children understand that when they do the good, that it's Jewish also? No, I want them to do the good. But it is critical for me that they love their Jewish identities and that they find a way and that they feel empowered to build for themselves a Jewish life. And Jewish ethics is a powerful tool to do that. And so if they're good, Dayenu. If that good and doing the good makes them love Judaism even more, that's the second stage of Dayenu.
It's hard to follow that because I completely agree. I'll just say that, again, I would be very grateful. And they are ethical people, but that they continue to be ethical people. And that is enough.
That's what you wrote in your brag sheet. How wonderful they are, right?
Yeah. You know what's terrible is that kind of thing doesn't count as a brag.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You know, being a good person wouldn't, you would have to quantify it. You know, my child is so charitable. These are his 50 charitable activities at these prestigious charitable foundations kind of thing. The problem's very deep in that regard. But I think that I also would like, ideally, my children to feel that different aspects of their different ethical traditions, because they also imbibe ethics from elsewhere, or just in different contexts that are complementary, but not articulated in the same way. And I would like them, ideally, to be able to bring those into conversation with one another and to maybe have each side learn from the other. I mean, going back to what Danielle quoted at the beginning from Pirkei Avot, who is wise, one who learns from everyone. I actually really believe that. That doesn't mean everybody is and every tradition is the same, not at all. But I do strongly believe that actually part of having a broad and deep Jewish identity is having the confidence to know that you can bring other things into the conversation and that bringing other things into the conversation can also push you to change some of your own views within a Jewish context. And one great thing, of course, about the Jewish tradition is that almost always one can find something within the tradition that does actually allow you the opportunity to go in a very different kind of direction. But again, yes, I will put on my brag sheet, I'll check it off as an achievement, ethical people, but one can't do that.
I want to thank you both. This is such a rich conversation, and I really appreciate you participating and being open and helpful here. So thank you so much.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode. Conversations for a Thoughtful Judaism is a product of the Shalom Harmon Institute of North America. And this episode was produced by me and edited by Alex Dillon. Like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, these conversations also connect to an introduction to Jewish ideas that we've developed for both teachers and students called Foundations for a Thoughtful Judaism. That's meant for learners of every background. So if you like what you heard today, you want to take a look. To find out more, go to shalomhartman.org/foundations. There's also a link in the show notes. Thanks for listening.